Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Guys, I had wanted to jump right to Kristi Noem doing her con law session at Congress, but Sarah, you had something you wanted to talk about first?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I just have a quick story to tell. Point of personal privilege.
Is it about me?
It is about you, in fact.
Oh, great. Now I'm interested.
I was going to start looking
at Twitter.
Now I'm so glad. It's sad a little bit. A while ago, I had a beloved teacher that passed away, but it was a few years ago, and they just had a memorial service, and so I went to my hometown, and I got to see a bunch of my old teachers there, and this particular teacher meant a great deal to me because
Tim is like, where do I come in?
Yeah, no, I'll tell you. It's coming, and people just it's coming. He meant a great deal to me because he taught this after school philosophy seminar. So, you know, he's trying to make me read Plato's Republic when I'm in the ninth grade. And I used to split my time between basketball practice and this philosophy seminar because I liked it so much. And this guy, my junior year, says, hey, you know, you may never have heard of this school, but there's this place where you could go and you could do, the English that you want to do or the political science and also play all your sports. And he said, it's a place called Kenyon College. It's where I went. And guy changes my life because I've never heard of Kenyon College. I have no idea what he's talking about, but we go visit it. It's where I end up going to college. And so, you know, there's like only a few stories that people always ask you. They're like, where'd you go to college? How'd you meet your spouse? Whatever. And so I tell the story about him all the time when I'm telling people why I went to Kenyon, because it's not always a school people have heard of. Anyway, so I'm at this memorial service and his wife was the school librarian. And I was... you know, chatting with her, and she tells me she is a regular TNL listener.
Oh, hey, and, girl.
Yeah. And so, but you know, she's like, if you drew an idea of a school librarian, she would be it. She was, you know, kind of ramrod straight, had a sort of, stern kind of way. And I asked her, I was like, oh, was it awful for you with me? And she starts to laugh and she's like, yes. And she imitates me walking in and she's like, yeah, every time you came, she's like, I would just say, oh shit. So we're laughing, but I'm like, oh, you're a TNL listener. And I was like, oh, every time I hear things like that, it's embarrassing to me to think about you, my high school librarian, listening to these boys and the way that they talk. And then of course, in the next episode that we do after that conversation, Tim gives an absolutely yes, graphic, all yes, totally unnecessary depiction of Donald Trump and sexual congress with dictators. And I just want to apologize, Mrs. for that, for Tim. And I don't condone it. And I was appalled, like many of our listeners, that I don't get a warning. And I think I should get a warning before we go in that direction.
See, here's the thing, Sarah. I initially felt this way about the book because I also did a lot of sex and cussing talk in the book. And like, I'd get letters from like a priest who'd be like, hey, like literally there's a priest in Oklahoma that was like, we have a priest book club and we read your book. I was like, whoa, no, please. I was like, why? And I think in some ways for folks that are a little bit more conservative in their personal demeanor, maybe not in their politics, but small C conservative, it's nice to have just like a little outlet, you know, to have like, oh, I just like a little bit, just like a little taste of kind of debauchery in their life via the podcast in the privacy of their ears, get a little chuckle out of it. I think that's okay.
Yeah.
Shaft talk.
You know, well, I think that there is a, I think there's a difference, Tim, between an R rating and an X rating. It's just what I think. And I think we That's I think we fair. Delved I think we went too far in the X direction.
I can argue with that. Even though Barry made a separate spin-off remix of that exchange for social media. So we posted it twice because he felt like we needed the remix version as well. So you might want to talk to the staff about that.
It was
apparently, not the staff in the way
you're
that
not allowed to say
week.
The word staff anymore. And also, I think he made it just because my face, the faces I was making while that was happening.
It was amazing. You did the full Larry David and yeah. You did it all naturally. You were like looking up and
Well, I'm a victim here. All right, well, JVL, go ahead. You can start the show. Personal
speaking
privilege.
Speaking of that, then let's just go ahead and start with Nancy Mace showing a picture of herself naked and her breasts in Congress yesterday. We can go straight into that. Was that on the show, Matt?
The fact is, the podcast is a reflection of the culture that we live in.
Kristi Noem testifying before Congress, and she is asked if she could explain what habeas corpus is, and here's what she said.
So, Secretary Noem, what is habeas corpus?
Well, habeas corpus is a constitutional right that the president has to be able to remove people from this country and suspend their right to... Let me stop you, ma'am.
Excuse me, that's incorrect.
President Lincoln used it.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Habeas corpus is the legal principle that requires that the government provide a public reason for detaining and imprisoning people.
So
almost.
I mean, on the one hand, I do not generally like gotcha questions like, you know, oh, what's the capital of Djibouti? Or, you know, let's approve. But, I mean, what is habeas is not really a gotcha question any more than, like, what are the three branches of government? Basic civics? And what is disturbing is that she didn't just get it wrong. She gave the exact opposite of the definition.
Which is why she's kind of in the ballpark. You know, I mean, it would have been something, right? If it was something, it was like, what is, you know, habeas corpus? And she confused it with, like, corpus mentis or something. And, like, gives a totally different answer. It's like, what happens when the body decays? You know, it's like, no, she gave the opposite answer, which is, you know, she at least was circling it.
The king can do whatever he wants to you. Isn't that what it means?
Do you know what I learned about habeas corpus?
In the philosophy seminar after school.
Probably when you were stealing stuff from the axe store in middle school.
No. I feel like most Americans learn about the suspension of habeas corpus and whether it is good or not when people are discussing Lincoln's suspension of habeas corpus, right? Part of it is, which isn't to say like everybody just kind of knows what it is. Here's where Kristi Noem, though, not knowing what it is particularly a problem. Now, if you'd asked that question of, let's say, Scott Bessent, I could see Scott Bessent being like, this is not my area. I don't know. If you're Kristi Noem, detaining someone and whether or not it is legal or illegal to detain them is her job mandate. It's what she does. It's the role.
What was that slip up there?
Sorry.
It was
I've got a cold, something. I had a grottle in my throat.
I would never have said it. I thought it's not what happened.
Okay. Stop it.
I mean, she is also currently embroiled, she and her agency, in a number of legal cases which center around literally the phrase habeas corpus.
Right.
So, I mean, this should be top of mind for her and not some theoretical part of something.
Google exists. I don't know, man. Kristi Noem.
I just think she got mixed up. She's in these meetings. Stephen Miller's talking about how he's going to pull a habeas, you know, so we can get, you know, kick out more like 19-year-old high school graduates, you know, who were falsely arrested for not putting on their turn signal and have been in the country for 16 years. And Kristi Noem, it's like, okay, yeah, we got to do the habeas. And so she just misunderstood what he meant when he's like, we got to get rid of the habeas. And she was thinking it was like, you know, kind of calling in a special, a secret weapon. Yeah. We get to declare habeas. It's an honest mistake. No? Yeah. Yeah, I guess probably not. I guess probably not for the Secretary of Homeland Security. It seems to be a pretty big problem.
I think not for her specifically.
It seems to be a pretty big problem, actually, yeah.
And again, because it seems like she's against it. Right, yeah. It doesn't seem like it.
She's actively against it.
We are not here. I'm not like, oh, look how stupid she is. It's like, look at this thing that she, as a constitutional officer, is supposed to be very concerned about protecting. And instead, not only does she not know about it, but she's against it.
JVL, how can you expect her to know things like habeas corpus, when she has to spend her time cosplaying like a border agent in different costumes and standing in front of people who actually had their habeas corpus was not being extended to them, right? Standing in front of, for photo ops. Like, how is she supposed to have the time? Where should she find the time?
Like reconstructing your cheekbones. The other thing about this is I do just want to go ahead and call it her stupid. She does seem to be very stupid. And in case there's any concern that there's a sexism element to calling her stupid, on the Daily Pod today with Susan Glasser, I went on a great length about how fucking stupid Joe Kent is, his Tulsi's little butt boy at the DNI, and how stupid Pete Hegseth is. And we really, like, we're getting to, like, a Mount Rushmore of people who are, like, not just, like, nefarious bad actors, not just kind of, like, have bad ideas, but are just, like, dumb as a box of rocks, which is a pretty big problem, I think.
Yeah, because he put the Weekend staff of Fox News in major policy positions.
Yes.
And so they are very dumb. No sexism. I mean, this is an equal opportunity group of idiots. And you could sort of disaggregate the mendacious ones from the morons.
Right.
Because that is the toxic brew that this administration sort of fuses together, right? This is why Stephen Miller, right, who is not a moron, he is mendacious and evil. And so what he does is he says, like, we are going to suspend habeas corpus in these cases. And I think Kristi Noem just says, like, I'm going to go back to cosplaying a border control agent who arrested these guys. And I'm just going to let Stephen Miller do the dirty work. And what Stephen does, like, he knows Trump is dumb, which is why he walks into the Oval Office and says, Mr. Trump, the Supreme Court just gave you a great ruling right after the Supreme Court ruled against him. Yeah. And so, like, people like Stephen understand the stupid people that they're dealing with and how to control them. There is so much going on right now in politics that it's going to be hard to get your head around it all. With all the craziness, much of what you need to know is just plain incomprehensible. That's obviously why we do what we do here, is try to help you make sense of it. But there's another great show that I want you guys to check out, because NPR Politics Podcast is where I go to decode what goes down in Washington and what every decision out there might mean for you. Every day, the NPR Politics team will focus on one thing and boil it down to 15 minutes or less. Think of it as your political multivitamin. They're the place I go. I love the NPR Politics Podcast. I've listened to it for years. Got a lot of cool people over there. Scott Detrow, Mara Liasson. I even went and saw their live show when they taped. My wife took me as a present. But it's a great place to go to get some, like, good policy breakdown. It's not so, chatty and extemporaneous as us. So listen now to NPR Politics Podcast, only from NPR or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you ever look at political headlines and go, huh? Well, that's exactly why the NPR Politics Podcast exists. We're experts, not just on politics, but in making politics make sense. Every episode, we decode everything that happened in Washington and help you figure out what it all means. Give politics a chance with the NPR Politics Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, speaking of stupid people, Bernie Sanders went on a bro podcast. I am not familiar with this show. Andrew
Scholes.
Sure,
you are. We've been talking about it a lot.
This is the one Pete just went on. Pete just went on this show.
Is it? Pete went on. It's the same. Okay. It's the guy I was ranting about who said that he used to be a Democrat his whole life, but he became a Republican because Republicans are bigger pussy hounds now. It's that guy. I did a rant about him.
Whatever.
Yeah, for all the good reasons to become a Republican.
Bernie was doing a little bit of, boy, is that guy holding on to 2016. The big thing to come from this is they were trying to get Sanders to talk. They were goading him into, well, isn't it fair to say that the Democratic Party is a threat to democracy? And Sanders said, yes, fair enough. That is, yeah, I'm not going to argue with that point. And that's why I'm proudly an independent. And I don't quite know what to say to that. Except that we're then going to spend the rest of
too.
Talking about how problematic the Democratic Party is and how it's fucking everything up. Please go ahead, Sarah.
Bernie Sanders is for some reason litigating the 2016 election here, right?
His point and 2020. That, he was litigating too.
Let me tell you, this is just a mini big lie. This is just a mini version of the big lie. It is, I lost, and therefore the election is rigged. Correct. And let me tell you why it's rigged, why he lost, which is that Bernie Sanders, who does have a real base of support, he has never been able to make any inroads with Black voters. Like, this is why Bernie Sanders didn't happen. He didn't happen because Black voters didn't like him, and they are a core constituent, especially of primary voters in the Democratic Party. And so I'm sorry that Black voters don't like that progressive agenda, but like, sorry, Bernie, that is the problem, is that you lost. I don't know what else to say.
I have other things to say. I watched a good bit of this. These things are fucking long, and I only have so much time of the day, but I watched a good bit of this. And I will say this for Bernie. If he wasn't such a petulant little bitch, he would be very good and useful in these settings, because like there were a number of occasions where he talks very plain, as in his Bernie way. Like it doesn't, even though it is talking points, it doesn't sound like it just because of the nature of how he speaks. Like he doesn't speak like he's giving a PowerPoint presentation. And he's speaking kind of at a level that these bros can understand, you know, about a variety of issues, and he kind of taps into their kind of anti-establishment like little instincts, right? And but then he uses that to weaponize it against Republicans and the big corporations, and how look at what Republicans are doing right now with the tax bill and how they want to take people's health care away, and et cetera. So like Bernie is pretty good in that setting, like 80% of the time, even if I don't agree with every single policy that he's uttering. This is the problem, though, is that like this is the thing that he is using to go after the Democrats on is just so pernicious and damning and wrong and again petulant. Like the guy, the prelude to that question that you just asked, JBL, is it wasn't Schultz, it was one of his little butt boys. It was like, you know, I feel like we haven't really had a fair Democratic election in the Democratic Party since 2008. And that's the thing that Bernie says, hard to argue with that. And that is just so insane and wrong for a million reasons, beginning with which, if any Democratic primary in recent times was not purely Democratic, small d Democratic, it would have been the 2008 one, right? Which was way
superdelegates.
Yeah, which was way closer, and which had these super delegates who were literally the deep state insiders that these guys like to rail against, who all had votes that were like equivalent to full congressional districts in certain states. And like the way that they, you know, there were times where Obama won huge amounts of delegates over Hillary because they kind of gamed the system where they did better in certain districts, and you know, they had like little electoral colleges in the states. It's not worth getting into all the details, but like if you're just looking at pure votes, Hillary Clinton was way closer to Obama in 2008 than Bernie ever was to her or to Biden. Bernie lost to Biden by like 9 million votes or something. It's insane. And I criticized this on Twitter, and I had a couple Bernie people coming at me and saying, well, Tim, didn't even you write that article that was like all of the Democrats should drop out and endorse the most electable one? Wasn't that anti-democratic? And I'm like, that's how primaries work. Like Bernie has allowed this to fester and like created this alternate universe where like this wasn't democracy because Pete and Amy endorsed Biden. And it's like that happens in every primary. You have a bunch of candidates come in. We have a couple of early races. The losers get out. They endorse the person that they either find the most electable or the most ideologically compatible with them. That's what happened. Like, that's what happened in 2020. That's what happened in the Republican primary in 1988 and 2012 and 1996. Like, that's what happened in 92. Like, that's how these things work. And so for Bernie not to just be like, guys, like, this isn't quite right. Like, sure, there's some people in the Democratic establishment that don't like me and that tried to, you know, use some levers or against me, but it was a fair election and I lost and we did the best we could. And I was really proud of my campaign. You know what I mean? Like, that's all he has to do. And now he has given them this canard that just like runs huge cover for Donald Trump. You know,
and JBL, and so, I'm going to just point out, because this is part of our argument, right? Where you're like, well, people should know better, right? How Donald Trump tries to rig elections and how could people not see this? It's stuff like this that confuses voters. I hear this from voters all the time where they're like, well, the Democrats aren't good at democracy either. And look what Bernie Sanders said.
Bernie is, it's just nonsense that Bernie's saying. Can't people see that too? Like it's every bit as much nonsense.
I saw an article yesterday or some other day that was like 65% of Philadelphia can't read. I don't know if that's true or not, but shout out Philadelphia. But no, these things are challenging, you know, and if you have this propaganda being pushed by the right wing media that the, you know, in order to run cover for Trump, that the Democrats aren't undemocratic, and you have the propaganda being pushed by Bernie that he got screwed, and all of Bernie's fans in the progressive media and the dirtbag left promote this, then like, yeah, it's not surprising that people believe it. I sure, we should expect more of people than to be able to read through propaganda, but like, it's not surprising. It's totally irresponsible, and it like, undermines any value he has of going on those things.
When people who know better lie to them, like this is literally just sour grapes. Because let me tell you something. You could, if you're Bernie Sanders, who, by the way, he had a stroke in the middle of his primary, too. Like he didn't, it was not rigged against him. Like people, he lost. Okay. But if you want to make it, if you want to have something to fight about, you could talk about the fact that the Democrats moved their primary to South Carolina under cynical terms that it was going to, you know, help. This is going into 2024. For cynical reasons, saying that it was going to enfranchise black voters who were more their base, when really it was about making sure Joe Biden did it. Like, there are things you can criticize that I think are, you know, they are. And Donald Trump also closed down the primary process for himself going into 2020. I know, because we tried to find primary challengers and literally they wouldn't hold primaries. These are what political parties do to like block things and advantage their incumbent. And you can make have a conversation about how this does not allow sort of pure democracy to flourish in some ways. That's different than saying I'm a sore loser and it was rigged against me.
By the way, one more thing about this. There are legitimate complaints about 2024. If Dean Phillips wants to go on one of these shows and offer a complaint, I have no issue with that. Dean Phillips has some legitimate complaints about the way the 2024 was handled. Bernie was on the side of Biden in the rigging of the 2024 election, if you want to call it a rigging, you know, or like in the restructuring of how the 2024 election worked. So again, you can have, there are legitimate complaints, which I'm sure we'll get into, about what happened in 2024. But like when Bernie's asked about this, he doesn't say, well, guys, no, that's not really quite right. Like I ran a really good race and it was surprising and Hillary beat me fair and square and then Joe beat me fair and square. And, you know, in retrospect to 2024, I think we probably should have had a primary rather than, you know, jamming it through. But circumstances happened and he was president and it wasn't undemocratic. It was just kind of bad timing. Like all of that would be true and like legitimate, but he chose to do the untrue, stop the steal against me type thing. Which is really, again, pernicious and bad.
I have two observations, one small and petty and one kind of big scale that I want to talk to you guys about.
Right, let's do petty.
The small and petty one is that Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat. He has always been self-consciously not a Democrat. And he is upset that the Democratic Party did not want to bestow its nomination on a guy who refuses to be part of their party.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Donald Trump became a Republican. Like, honestly, like if you want to make that comparison, he did a hostile takeover of the party. That was on offer.
This is like, you know, Nissan coming into the Detroit Auto Show and then complaining that it doesn't get Car of the Year because it's not one of the big three Detroit. Like, it's their fucking show. Of course, they're not going to give you the Car of the Year award. You're not one of them. What do you, you know, I don't even know what to tell you, buddy. But the bigger thing is, I don't know that I fully believe this, but I 80% believe it. So we used to have the primary system at the presidential level has become democratized starting in the mid-1970s. And it used to be basically decided by the party itself and party insiders.
Smoke-filled rooms,
right? And it, you know,
something we said for smoke-filled rooms, by the way.
Well, this is my question for you. Do you believe that as the process has become more democratized and the power of the parties has diminished, the quality of presidential nominees has improved?
I think it's a mixed bag is the real answer to that, because Barack Obama was certainly a stronger candidate for the Democrats than Hillary would have been in 2008, just like purely electorally and, you know, TBD about what an actual presidency would have looked like. So Hillary would have been the nominee in a smoke filter. I'm just trying to like look back at recent ones. You know, obviously Trump.
Mike Dukakis, Bob Dole.
Stopping Trump would have been preferable.
Donald Trump, there, just again, if you were to plot this out, I think the trend line is pretty obviously downward.
I don't know. I don't think I agree with that. HW, great. Bill Clinton, fine for like what his party was. I don't think I agree with this. And I, if you ask me, do we want to go back to smoke-filled rooms?
Yes. Yes. No. That's what I want. I want to go back to the party.
I'm a maybe on that.
I understand.
I don't think it's possible in the modern media age. This is a, there are some other folks that this is like a big hobby horse for. I like in a video game, right? Like if I was setting up a video game society, which maybe we are, you know, just characters in a video game. But I would want smoke filled rooms because it would be cleaner. But I just don't really think it's possible.
I want things like open primaries. Like, I think there were reforms that get you closer. What? Why are you looking at me like that?
More popular input?
Where you don't have to just vote. I think the problem with primaries, if we're really going to get into it, is that they are decided by incredibly narrow and extreme factions of the party that are pushing both parties more and more into their extreme versions of themselves. Whereas if you had open primaries, and you were in a place like Louisiana that's red, and all the Democrats could vote in the Republican primary, and you were able to get a more moderate candidate as a result of that, I think that is a better solution.
The start of summer is an incredibly hectic time. Everyone in my house has stuff going on. Our schedule is so full that, you know, there's not a lot of time to go grocery shopping. And that's why Hungry Root was so great. Hungry Root is like having your own personal shopper. They take care of the weekly grocery shopping, recommending healthy groceries tailored to your taste, nutrition preferences, and health goals. They make it easy to eat high-quality, nutritious food and achieve any diet or health goals, from anti-inflammatory to gut-friendly, gluten-free, dairy-free, high-protein, and more. They make groceries shopping simple and stress-free. Just tell them about your goals and preferences, and they'll fill your cart for you with personalized recommendations that get smarter as they learn more about what you liked or didn't. Hungry Root has great options for the whole family with healthy groceries like smoothies, kid snacks, sweets, and ready-to-eat meals, salad kits, and even supplements. As for me, there were two things about the Hungry Root order I liked. One, it was so easy to get healthy snacks in. Always want healthy snacks in the house. Added them to the order. You know, sometimes we're running out after a grocery shop. And it was stuff that my husband liked, my kid liked. That was great. I've had good experiences with a number of different delivery meal companies. But here's the one thing I'd say about Hungry Root is, like, when they tell you it's fast, it's fast. I cooked a dinner, baby, in like 18 minutes that had some pesto on it that everybody liked. There's some quinoa. I impressed some people. They didn't believe me. I forget where they were. They were maybe at a school thing, husband and daughter. They came home, boom, 18 minutes cooking. It was yummy. We love, for that reason, we love Hungry Root. You can take advantage of this exclusive offer for a limited time. Get 40% off your first box, plus get a free item in every box for life. Go to hungryroot.com/thenextlevel and use code thenextlevel. That's hungryroot.com/thenextlevel, code thenextlevel, to get 40% off your first box and a free item of your choice for life. hungryroot.com/thenextlevel, code thenextlevel.
And now's the part where I say maybe Bernie had a point.
Okay, great.
Because the that New York Times piece about Democratic donors going crazy about trying to build their own influencers in a lab and spending, I didn't add it up, but it was a few hundred million dollars. The idea, like, we have to make a Joe Rogan. I mean, yeah.
For people who didn't see the article, Bernie's set right. It up. There are several different
like, Democrats are like, what the fuck is this? Yeah,
there are several different groups, which include many people that I'm friends with, and, you know, have been supporters of us in various ways, who are like gathering different kind of ideas for cracking this nut of how to break the conservative advantage over the media ecosystem. Is that a good summary of what the story is? Yeah. And how they're giving money?
It is, which by the way, is not a bad thing for people to have, be having a thought exercise about at
no,
all.
No, it isn't. And there's a lot of money that's going into, not us, so to speak, we're doing fine, influencers and other people, you know, in order to try to prop them up so that there is more pro-democratic material out there on the internet. And like, here's, and I've given the feedback I'm about to give to several of the people involved in this. So this is, I am totally open book on my views on all this. Like, the Democrats do not need any more Brian Tyler Cohen's or David Pakman's or Midas Touches, whatever you think about any of those people. Me and BTC are pals. I did a show on his channel. It's just like that there's plenty of that already. And like there's plenty of like Democratic, like yay Democratic stuff out there. Could there be more? Could they figure out how to do it in different platforms? Sure. Like, are there some like tailored investments you could do to like reach young people who are only consuming things on, you know, TikTok and Discord and some other app I haven't even heard of yet, right? Sure, I'm open to that, like idea that trying to trickle down some of that stuff from other areas to younger people makes sense. Sarah wrote a good article this morning about how if you just look at the data from 2024 election, young people was a big problem for Democrats, among other things. I don't know, Ms. Sarah might want to talk about that later. But like the Democrats' problem, though, is not that there's not enough pro-Democratic propaganda out there. There's a significant amount. It's doing pretty well already. And their problem is anytime somebody shows one of these charts about like conservative leaning information versus progressive leaning information and how conservatives are doing better in media, it's like the charts aren't apples to apples. Like it'll show Ben Shapiro versus Pod Save America. Sorry to the bros. I don't mean that to be pejorative, but like that's kind of directionally apples to apples. Like they both are ideologically based. They both tend to be for their parties, you know, whatever. And then it'll be like, you know, Charlie Kirk against Brian Tyler Cohen or whatever. And it's like, okay, yeah, like that's kind of a parallel. But then it'll be like Theo Von, Andrew Schultz, Joe Rogan, Barstool, like other things. And like none of those are political shows. Like none of the Democrats' problem is not like it's pretty even Steven when it comes to the straight political shows. The Republicans are doing a little bit better. Democrats could invest a little bit of money to even that out. That's going to be a very solvable problem. The big gap is in like culture type shows that are politics second or politics fourth, where the hosts are like kind of reluctant Republicans, actually. Like Joe Rogan's like, I kind of hate most of the Republicans, actually, if you listen to him. Like Theo, just on his show yesterday, was talking about Gaza and how he's having change of heart on Gaza. And like, yeah, he's like just learning about this now. You know, it's like that Andrew Schultz guy is like, I've been a Democrat my whole life. I'm just sick of them. They're annoying, right? Like that's the tone of these shows. These shows aren't like, we really like the big, beautiful bill. Like Trump is crushing it with the big, beautiful tax cut. Like you know, we're going to have John Thune on today and do a suck up interview with him where he can get good free press. Like that's not what's happening on those shows. The shows are talking about boobs and sports and crypto and the stock market and fucking whatever, you know, controversy there is of the day. And so if the Democrats want to try to invest in that, good luck creating somebody that does that. But like the show output is not going to be something that like is going to be a welcome space for Hakeem Jeffries to go on and get a softball interview. So there's my rant about that story.
And I'm just going to, just to put this in sort of, and I'm going to actually do a stipulation just like Tim, that I also know many of these people and have talked to them about their thoughts. I mean, we are in independent media space. And so therefore people who are looking at the independent media space, many of them call us up to be like, what do you think about new ways to engage it? And I think Tim is absolutely right about when people put up, because I've seen these charts where people put up sort of like these little circles to show, to represent the shows, and they show how outmatched Democrats are. Like they include Joe Rogan, they include all the culture stuff in that. And of course, like they are outmatched, but you know, I've always said this, that like the left's Joe Rogan was Joe Rogan. Like Joe Rogan was a Bernie guy. And this is a bigger part of one of the things I say in the piece that I wrote today for the Bulwark is like there are a lot of things that used to be axiomatic about politics. And one of them that I think are no longer true. And one of them would be politics is downstream from culture. And I think actually now like politics and culture are very much fused. And that Tim is 100% right that like part of the thing with this ecosystem is that Democrats avoid going on Theo Von. They avoid going on Rogan and a lot of these things because they're dumb. Like they're dumb and they don't seem high value. But the fact is, like, we've moved into, and like JVL and I had like another long tortured conversation on the secret pod about, you know, which came first, bad people or bad politics, like, you know, which is, but the fact is, like, when you look at the data, the slide with men is catastrophic. And the slide with men could probably be traced pretty clearly back to many of them are engaged with David Portnoy and Joe Rogan and a lot of these podcasts that are about sports or whether a shark and a gorilla, like who would win if they met in a death match, which is like basically what I
also COVID. We should mention COVID
and COVID, right? People came really attached to these people, hung out with them when they couldn't hang out with their friends during COVID. And the reason that Democrats wouldn't go on a lot of them is these guys are, to coin a phrase, or no, sorry, not to coin them, like they are quote unquote problematic in a lot of ways. And like Call Her Daddy, like I don't want to go on a podcast called Call Her Dad. Like, what is this? It feels unserious. And but like our culture has moved. When JBL and I were talking and he said, I'm not saying people are bad. I'm saying our culture is bad. And I actually have been turning that over in my head a little bit since we had the conversation, because that's sort of a different proposition than people, right? Because my contention has always been like, hey man, people got good and bad, they got light and dark, and it really comes down to like which one are you feeding. And it's like a lot of the lousy stuff is getting fed by hanging out with people who are like, I mean, we are a society soaked in online porn and gaming culture and like a bunch of stuff that didn't used to be true that is like really poisoning people's minds, and they go to hang out with these dudes as part of like a lifestyle choice. Like it's just like the soup they want to swim in. And then it infects the politics because they're all one thing now. And so I don't think, and just again, to go back to a sort of a Republican way of looking at this, the Democrats do not have a supply problem. They have a demand problem. And you are not going to create the demand with more supply, right? You've got to figure out how you meet the demand, I think probably in a healthier, more nutritious way. And so I think that people are going to have to grapple with this slightly differently.
Or I would offer not in a nutritious way. I mean, like the answer that they don't, that people don't really want, that a couple of my buddies on my middle-aged bro text chains have been talking about, is like this guy Stavros. His show isn't on anymore, but it used to be called Come Town. And the show is, again, fart jokes, women, sex, like all that sort of stuff. But he's like a lefty. Not our kind of lefty, maybe JVL's because he's a communist now, but he's like a lefty, right? And like kind of like maybe meeting the demand is that. And like Howard Stern was a Democrat. Like, yes. That's the other thing. It's like hard for people to put their wrap their heads around. Like maybe like the thing is like having somebody that like is finding or cultivating somebody that's coarse and gross and disgusting and not nutritious to the culture.
Hedonism.
But yeah. On the topic of when politics comes up, they make fun of Kristi Noem for being an idiot rather than making the fun of the Democrats for being nerds. You know what I mean? Like we're just, but again, you can't create that in a lab. Like that stuff all like builds over time, and like that is, you know, not the kind of thing that I think a lot of people are thinking about when they think of
addressing this problem. Is that the answer to this, the solution to this, is actually in going and participating in the further coarsening of the culture. But just like, as you say, being a Democrat.
Right.
And like, is that a good answer?
No.
Yeah, we need to show that traffics in, you know, in misogyny and, you know, sexism is really lowbrow and is respectful to conspiracy theories and maybe plays footsie with anti-vax stuff. But ultimately, at the end of the day, says that you know, you should be with the Democrats.
Yeah, this is a real thing to grapple with, right? So I have long argued. Oh, hold on, one second. When people say like, well, you can't nominate a woman or someone of color anymore because we live in a sexist, racist society, there's part of me that's like, nah, it sort of depends on the woman. But part of what I know I mean by that I don't love, is like, she has to be someone who can hang in these broed out spaces and sort of endure a kind of raunchy and unserious thing, which like doesn't feel good to a lot of women. Like there are people like that, the call her daddy woman, like can thrive in that environment. But many, especially serious women, right, who maybe take themselves seriously, don't find that to be an environment where they like go to talk about policy things, which is why I do think, you know, I've been thinking a lot about how you just untether people from like the politician living inside of them and try to get to the human being that, that, because you can tell when someone's sort of fake hanging and letting the dudes be whatever. And you can also tell though when somebody kind of stands up to them, puts them in their place, demonstrates they know more than them. And so you are like, there's going to have to be women who are going to recognize that this environment requires something different of them. And it's like very unfair, but I think most people, but women and often minorities understand that like life's not fair in many of these ways. And like, you're just going to have to figure out how to live in the culture. And this is where like, you don't always have to build it yourself. Like you are going to have to go into these things that exist. And sorry, I'm just going to throw one more point on here, 'cause this is part of this discussion around influencers, which is, I think there's like a weird pressure on Democrats to become the influencers themselves, to be more on TikTok, whatever. No, be a serious legislative person, like in a grown up serious kind of way. And give people content. That doesn't mean you're not a content creator. You should give people content. You should get up and say things from your heart and straightforwardly as a person, and like let the influencer culture grab it and take it. Like that already exists. You yourself do not need to sort of pull yourself down to be a TikToker. Like let the TikTokers be TikTokers. You be a politician / human politician.
Yeah,
not just somebody who's
Or do it if you can, but don't do it if you can't.
I mean, if you're AOC, who's very native to the product, fine. But you produce a lot of cringe if you're not AOC. And that's bad for you.
Even if you are, you do. Yeah, I mean, Trump produces a lot of cringe. This is like the other thing. It's like it really is. And so this is, and I don't know what's happening in all these conversations. And I know at least one of the people that was quoted in the New York Times story, and I at least seem to be aligned from the last time we spoke about it. But it's like, you can't, like, you know, you have to take lumps. Like, you have to totally reprogram your mind for, like, what you're supposed to do. And this, by the way, is only if you're trying to be a national political leader. Right? Like, this is the other thing. Like, this advice is all pointless if you are, you know, Sheldon Whitehouse. And you're just like going to try to rerun for Senate in Rhode Island. Like you don't have to start doing this, or like some mid like bench.
Please, Sheldon Whitehouse, do not make TikToks.
Mid-bench House person. Like you don't have to do anything. Like this is only for the stuff that seeps into national politics and people that have aspirations to be national political figures. You know, but like Trump gets fucking dunked on a lot. Right? Like Trump says stupid things. He just says cringe things. Like he has a whole history of cringe. Like that is out there, and but like he connect like there's a certain group of people that he connected with, right? And so like that like requires a mindset of like a lack of caution that is just not natural to somebody that has decided to rise the ranks carefully through their life to become a politician.
And yeah, because sorry, can I just I want to put a finer point on what I say, because I don't want it to sound like it's conflicting. Because on one hand, I'm asking people, be a grown-up politician, right? Be a serious person, but also like be a human being. Like the culture now sort of demands that you are able to sit in spaces for long periods of time and talk about a multifaceted group of things. And so like you do have to do that. But you don't have to debase yourself or be something you're not, because people can read it all now. Like the difference with the thing that has changed in the environment is that people are engaging with people like us all the time now. They know when you're careful. They could feel the carefulness coming off of Kamala Harris. They could feel the constructed politician inside of her, which is why in focus groups I hear people all the time say, I don't want a regular politician. And so this ability to go on and argue with people, let them like have a tough, thick skin for people making fun of you. This point about Trump is exactly right. Trump beast modes through these things by not letting any of it stop him, not letting it make him like withdraw into himself and push through. And that is like, it's a new thing for politicians to have to figure out how to do, but it is necessary for the job if you are going to move into a national political figure or somebody who is even creating like the face of the party, which is a real thing.
I just have one more and another thing about this, is like there's a little bit of a misnomer it's based on also, because like when you see those little bubbles, it never includes like the Jimmy Kimmel show.
Right.
Or Stephen Colbert. These are all like there are a lot of liberal cultural institutions out there. A big problem is that they mostly appeal to old people. So like if you're like, okay, your challenge is figuring out how to repurpose that for a new generation. But anyway, I think sometimes it's like, oh, we've been so dominated. And it's like, not exactly. Like some of the stuff is you're not being just honest with yourself about the situation.
Summer is fast approaching and the folks at Mint Mobile have a hot take. Getting the summer bod is out and getting your savings bod is in. This spring and summer, we want skimpy wireless bills and fat wallets. And with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month, you can have both without breaking a sweat or the bank. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you. All plans come with high-speed data or data of your choice and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone along with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get your summer savings and shop premium wireless plans at mintmobile.com/thenextlevel. That's mintmobile.com/thenextlevel. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month 5 gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. All right, continuing the problems with the Democratic Party. Cory Booker, my boy, fresh off his filibuster, voted to confirm Jared Kushner's dad. Maybe Bernie Sanders is right. I don't know. You guys have thoughts on this?
I'm waiting to hear what Corey's rationale is for this. I think it was unbelievably stupid, and it's something that's going to be an actual political problem for him, which most of the stuff isn't. It just washes away. But it's like it's just too easy for people to grasp onto. Like you voted to confirm the Nepo Grampy of Jared Kushner, who is a criminal. Like, why?
I'm gonna indulge in what is irresponsible speculation, but Jared Kushner's from New Jersey,
right?
So true. Dirty Jersey.
Yeah, and I think they probably know each other personally. And my guess is that the Kushner family has been donating to Democrats because, again, all these people were Democrats before they decided to hijack the Republican Party. And so, I don't know, that would be my guess.
Before we get to maybe hopefully more bad Republican candy, while we're doing bad Democrats, I know that we're like, everybody's really champing at the bit about doing Biden and Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson stuff. But I had a conversation with a very important listener yesterday to this podcast, whose view I want to feel represented on the show, because I think that there are a lot of loud listeners who are like, please be nice to Joe Biden and like whatever, and we get it, it's bad, we'll move on. But there are some listeners, including the one I spoke to, who's never voted for Republican in his life, is a long time Democrat, who consumes a ton of lefty media, who was reading excerpts from the book and reading excerpts from Jake and Alex's book and like learning about how much money Mike Donilon was making as campaign manager and how much he was protecting Joe Biden. And they were like, I'm fucking pissed. They were like, I am extremely mad at Mike Donilon and Steve Ricchetti and Jill Biden and Hunter Biden and also Joe, obviously, who had the diagnosis this week, which is, you know, sad, and we hope the best for his recovery. But like that fact that he had that diagnosis, like, does not absolve like the anger, does not like retrieve it for some people. And I think that because there's some very loud voices on social media, you know, in lefty circles who want to berate anybody that wants to express this feeling, that is a very valid feeling. And it's a feeling I hear from a lot of people. who just don't want to get into this fight with people on the internet. I think that there are a lot of folks that, I don't know, that maybe, you know, everybody's, you know, we're hanging out in a pro-democratic coalition now. So everybody's feelings are valid here. Everybody has valid feelings, but maybe consider like the very valid feelings of like, the more you look at this, like, I'm sure there's some people that are mad at Jake and Alex, and so, I'm not really thrilled that they went on the Megyn Kelly show. I don't really know what the value is of that. And there's plenty of people to be mad at in this situation, but the anger towards the folks that protected Joe Biden and forced him on this is an anger that is unquenchable for me and for some listeners. And so I did not want to elide that this week.
Are you suggesting that Hunter Biden might not have the best judgment?
Again, and we don't need to relive all of the podcasts for 2024. Yeah. But the idea that Hunter Biden was ever in the Oval Office at all having these conversations was an absolute fucking offense and affront. And anybody that wants to be like, oh, he's just his son and he loved and you guys shouldn't be so harsh. Like, it is appalling that Hunter Biden was in the room as I guess like a quasi chief of staff for a while during this period. It is fucking appalling.
All right, Sarah, do you want to kick somebody here? Let me do
two quick things. One is the rage that we feel at these people is entirely proportional to how bad Donald Trump is acting right now. Like, these things are connected. Yes. People who disaggregate them and say, look at what Trump is doing, not look back at Joe Biden. I think for us, especially people who were actively working to elect Democrats because we were so clear, took so seriously how dangerous Donald Trump was, and understand very well how dangerous he is in this moment, how dangerous all the things he's doing are, and are clear about that. When you look back and see the people who brought us to this moment through choices made for, I think, cynical reasons, the anger is boundless. Yeah. That
four
though,
milli.
What?
It's nice. 4 milli for Mike Donilon. It's really something. It's a nice paycheck for somebody that did a fucking horrific job.
Yeah, I mean, I could go through a whole thing on that. I'm not going to, but just because you're like, well, whichever way this goes, you got yours. It's sort of like Joe Biden when he was like, well, I'll have done my best. I'm like, that's not what we're dealing with here. Do not tell us there's an existential threat to democracy and then behave like this. Okay, but that's actually not the thing that has me the most tuned up right now. I got two things.
Oh, great.
One is listening to Republicans, though, right now, talk about Joe Biden's lie or Joe Biden's cover-up. When these guys have lied about an election being stolen, when they instigated a coup, when they have bent over for everything Donald Trump has done, our boy Noah Rothman, and I know Noah's one of the good guys, I do. But for NRO talks about Joe Biden being an inveterate liar, and how dare people cover for him. And I'm like, have you met your boss, Rich Lowry? Have you met the people who've covered for Donald Trump for the last 8 to 10 years? Those people being loud at the moment, going on Megyn Kelly's show, like, sorry, Jake. Love you, Jake. But like, let's not go and like apologize. Oh, the right had this right. No, we all could see it. Everybody could see it. Like,
also, Ben Smith was on Mark Halperin's show, and Mark Halperin didn't get the joke. And when Mark Halperin was like, the Newsmax had this right, and the real media didn't. And Ben Smith goes, yeah, Newsmax got 20 of Joe Biden's 3 scandals correct.
Yeah.
And Mark Halperin just, like, didn't get it. And, like Ben, like, waited for the laugh line applause. And it was like, Mark was just like, yeah, they did. Correct. Newsmax did get 20 of Joe Biden's 3 scandals. Correct. It's like, yeah, if every time Joe Biden woke up in the morning, it was a fucking scandal, it was Burisma, it was whatever, then, like, yeah, you're going to get one eventually. But anyway, no, that really fucking grinds my gears, too.
Yeah, this is not about them getting it right. It's about people like Donlin and Joe Biden getting it wrong. Like, everybody knew. You look at any polling from back then, 70% of Democrats would tell you they don't want this guy to run. I probably have 70 podcasts in which I play the sound of voters being like, I think he's sick. I don't think he can stand up. They, you know, put their arms out to steady him when he talks. You know, they're like, they talk about Democrats are like, I'm so scared when he talks. I'm so afraid for him. It wasn't because they were mad at him. They're just like, this guy shouldn't be running for president. The idea that an 86-year-old, okay, his cancer diagnosis, I agree. When I saw it, I am sad for him. I'm sad for his family. Also, he's 83 years old. Like, the idea that this something like this wasn't going to happen, 83-year-olds get these. It was so irresponsible. Irresponsible from the top down. But that is actually not that. So I am exercised.
We have two sub. I had 2 points, and point two had two sub points, and point and the second sub point also had two sub points.
Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry. No, I'm doing great. Yet another
I love
thing.
The energy.
I got so many feelings.
I love the passion.
But this other one is actually something I might need to write this piece, which is from a crisis communication standpoint. Now I'm just going to put on my comms hat. And Tim, tell me what you think about this.
All right.
There is a very specific way you do crisis communications. There's three stages. Tell it all, you tell it fast, and you tell the truth. And the reason you do this is so it doesn't trickle out over time and extend a negative conversation for forever. And this is what they're doing right now. And so if Joe Biden, not that he has any interest in sort of atoning for this horrible misjudgment, but if Democrats wanted to do something about this, what they would do is not put him out on a tour that says like, no, that basically just confirms everything people think, which is like this guy, no reason this guy should have run again. They should go out and say, we made a mistake. It was our bad judgment. You know, we thought we've known him. He was a guy who when he falls down, he gets back up. But like, it was wrong. We made a mistake and we dragged the party with us. And it wasn't them. You know, we only showed him to them during short hours so that they thought he seemed OK. But you know what? It's on us. Somebody should do that. That is the decent thing to do. And it's how you handle a crisis, how you handle a crisis and stop the bleeding. And instead, right now, they are going to let Democrats walk the plank on Joe Biden going into the next election. And that is wrong. That is unfair to the Democrats. It is unfair to the political party and it is unfair to this country. Somebody should do the right thing right now.
I agree with every part of that except one thing, which is like, I there can be some unintended consequences, some unforeseen way in which it matters in the future. But like, fundamentally, the midterm elections and the next election aren't going to be about Joe Biden. That doesn't mean they shouldn't do everything you just said. I'm a little bit skeptical of that. I've seen some takes out there that are like, to win the Democratic primary in 2028, you have to prove now you're on the right side of the Biden thing. And I'm kind of like, I don't know. I mean, you should be on the right side of the Biden thing to be on the right side of the Biden thing. It's the right side to be on. But like, I don't think it really is going to matter.
You know why I disagree with that? And here's why.
I disagree with which? I disagree with
Tim's idea that it won't matter. And here's why. Tim could be right, but this would be the reason I would think he might not be. There is nothing worse for Democrats right now than the fact that the media feels like they were lied to and that they have been made to look like fools. And so they will feel the need in order to reclaim their own, like what they believe is the trust of the audience, right? That they will need to ask this question over and over and over again. They won't let it go because they feel like they were made to look the fools. And you know what? Internally, they will feel like they screwed up. And so they will overcompensate by pushing this, I think, a lot longer than it needs to go, which is why somebody has to figure out how to pull this knife out of the wound and get it wrapped up so people can move on.
Before we move on, can I just get a quick over-under?
Are you still here?
How many weeks it is until we get somebody saying, Democrats covered up Joe Biden's cancer, so Donald Trump must be allowed to have a third term. Are we 2 weeks from that or 1 week?
I mean, whenever Donald Trump wakes up and bleats that, that'll happen.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened. Okay.
Oh, I'm so excited about our new sponsor, Wild Alaskan. When was the last time you truly trusted the seafood you brought home? I used to question everything from nutrition to taste and sustainability. until Wild Alaskan Company became my go-to for meals from under the sea. Wild Alaskan Company is the best way to get wild-caught, perfectly portioned, nutrient-dense seafood delivered directly to your door. You will be amazed at how good this fish tastes. It's 100% wild-caught, never farmed. That means no antibiotics, GMOs, or additives, just clean, real fish that support healthy oceans and fishing communities. It's also nutrient-rich and full of flavor. Wild Alaskan fish is frozen off the boat to lock in taste, texture, and nutrients like omega-3s, and it's sustainably sourced. Wild-caught from Alaska, every order supports sustainable harvesting practices, and your membership delivers flexible shipments, expert tips, and truly feel-good seafood. Guys, this stuff is so good. I love fish. I really love salmon. Wild Alaskan Company will send you stuff. They freeze it right on the boat as soon as it comes up off the line. And the summer grilling season, you go out, you put this stuff on the grill. Oh my gosh, I can't even tell you how great it is. I'm a salmon guy. They do both a coho and a sockeye salmon. Very slight differences between them, little things for us connoisseurs. The flavor in these things is so good. And you sear one side, then you flip it over so that the skin is letting it cook on you. If you want to do a cedar plank, you do it on a cedar plank. You can marinate it beforehand if you like, although frankly, I think that this fish speaks for itself. They do a Pacific halibut and a Pacific cod as well that are off the hook. I'll talk about them more probably on the next ad we do for them. I'm telling you guys, Wild Alaskan Company is legit. Fantastic. The best seafood you'll get when you're doing your stuff at home. If you're not completely satisfied with your first box, Wild Alaskan Company will give you a full refund, no questions asked, no risk, just high quality seafood. Not all fish are the same. Get seafood you can trust. Go to wildalaskan.com/next level for $35 off your first box of premium wild-caught seafood. That's wildalaskan.com/next level for $35 off your first order. Thanks to the Wild Alaskan Company for sponsoring this episode. These guys are the best. Big, beautiful Bill. Which I guess it's nice that we get two BBBs, right? We had Build Back Better, now a big, beautiful bill. I guess we have to talk about it since it's the only thing that Congress is going to pass between now and 2026. Thoughts?
I'm enjoying it. I'm like enjoying the ride. I'm eating the popcorn. I'm watching it all. And it's good. It's a good spectator sport. All kind of doesn't matter, I don't think, because they're going to end up jamming something through eventually. Like the political pressure is just going to be too great not to. But it's pretty funny on a number of counts. And I think that like looking at the thing that's the most like outrageous about it, or I don't know, like is it funny? I'm trying to think. Is it funny? I guess it's kind of funny. Like they're going to jam through like one of the most irresponsible and like politically toxic pieces of legislation imaginable, like which they totally didn't have to do. Like Donald Trump totally could have said to them, like, we're just going to extend the Trump tax cuts and we're going to let them expire on rich people. And we're going to do the no tax on tips thing for people and just kind of and we're going to sunset it in 4 years. So it didn't cost that much because I'm going to be gone anyway. Right? Like there's a way to do this. Where like it would have been politically fine, but it's crazy. I mean, like the CBO score is insane. CBO score is like it's like a reverse Robin Hood. They're like, hey, we're gonna shoot up interest rates on everybody because we're gonna have the like biggest debt bomb in modern history, and then on top of that, we're gonna give the rich people they're gonna have 4% more income at the end of this. And poor people, well, they're not going to have health care. And if you're really poor and you need SNAP benefits, you're probably going to lose those too. It's like, it's a totally just like, I mean, like the bill is unbelievably irresponsible. It takes the worst of like all of the different elements of the faction and combines it together into one thing. And yeah, I mean, that's where, I think they're all going to end up eating it. Maybe people won't care. I don't know. Like, whatever. Like, like predicting the politics of next year. I don't know. But they could have done a popular thing, and they're going to not do it.
Sarah?
I'm a little bit with Tim in the sense that there is nothing to do, because this is just a Republicans fighting themselves. So, right, like, the Democrats are on the sidelines, and so watching them fight with each other, like, watching Trump, like, fight with the SALT people and tell Mike Lawler, like, I know your district better than you do, and if you lose because of SALT, you were going to lose anyway. Like, that's fun. It's fun watching people sort of get what they deserve on Trump. And it's also fun watching, like, the Tom Massey's of the world stand on principle and having Trump be like, I'm going to get you out of here. I'm going to primary you. And then he's, like, sending out mailers trying to raise money on the fact that Trump's mad at him. Like, watching them be messy is fun. I will say that if you care about the debt and the deficit and the level of interest we're going to pay on it with inflation this high and how catastrophic that is for the country, it's pretty bad. Obviously, though, I do think from a political opportunity standpoint, like, as Democrats should be able to, like, jam a lot of this down their throats.
What I was going to ask you.
Yeah, go ahead.
How do you do that? What are the ways to inflict pain politically, metaphorically?
Well, so I don't want to, my team gets really mad at me when I preempt the focus group pod, but we do Congress and the bill this week on the show, and the voters are the best. They're just like, yeah, you got to extend the tax cuts and you got to cut the debt. And you can do them both because
the very smart voters.
I do think this is a little bit sort of Republican messaging that goes back a long way, which is the theory. And these are, a lot of them were sort of older Trump voters. And, you know, the contradictions all live together in their minds. They were like, pass this big, beautiful bill. I am for it. And you're like, what's in it? I don't know. They don't know. And so here's the thing. Democrats, if you can't take this guy gave a massive tax cut to rich people and then cut Medicaid for poor people and SNAP benefits, like, you know.
And also skyrocketed your interest rates. Because that's the debt thing has been, you know, just for those of us, you know, old school Republicans, give the eye shade Republicans, you know. Like looking at the ledger, it's been hard to get people to care.
It has,
which is part of the reason why we are where we are. Yeah. And you know, and like, cause there just hasn't been any real tangible consequences, and the numbers start getting big. It's like Ilion. It's like 8 trillion, 9 trillion, 10 trillion, whatever. But like the interest rates, even though they're not historically high, they're uncomfortably high for people for what they've been used to lately. And I was just talking to a guy yesterday, for example. He at a party, you know, and he's like, his house, they cut the FEMA money. Right. And so there was some FEMA money coming to the state for like insurance proofing some of these houses, like new roofs and stuff. And he was like, so we were going to get that. And that was part of DOGE that got cut. So we're no longer trying to protect any of the homes in the hurricane path from weather, whether or not you think that's a good policy. You know, that's just something that they're doing. So I was like, well, why don't you just move? And he's like, well, we're paying 3% on this house. And the interest rates right now are whatever, 6-7%, if you want to move. So many people are going through this, right? And so he's like, even if we downsized and moved to a house that's like a little bit, you know, protected from the flood areas down here, it's like we're going to end up paying more in the mortgage and et cetera, et cetera. And that story, there's so many people in that story. Like, oh, I want to take a new job in another city, but I'm paying 2% of my mortgage right now. If I move, it's even if I move to a cheaper city, right? Like, there's just a lot of people who feel stuck. And this bill, like jamming another $6 trillion in debt on top of the planned increase of debt, which was already happening. You know, so we end up in some place where it's like we have $55 trillion or something in debt. The bond numbers are going up. We're already seeing this with the interest rates. I do think eventually, like, not everybody, not your average, you know, not the dumbest voter that doesn't pay attention to anything that's, you know, whatever, rent. But like, there's a decent constituency of people out there for whom that is a real thing that is going to happen on their lives. And I think we're hitting real world on it a little bit right now. JVL, you seem skeptical of that.
I don't know. I mean, we live in a world where Kristi Noem doesn't know what habeas corpus is. Like, nothing matters. And when nothing matters, it becomes impossible to predict what will matter.
Oh, no.
Right? Because it becomes like Brownian motion.
Well, things matter. I don't think we're in LOL nothing matters. This is let me tell you what. This is one of those things where, like, there are real consequences to the debt being at $55 trillion. There are real consequences to us paying interest on that. Like, we are facing down right now. I mean, I do think we are, and this is sort of a, I'll go into JVL-ish territory here, where, like, we are behaving wildly unseriously in this moment in terms of what we're, like, they're not having an honest conversation. Donald Trump is lying to people, and these voters are buying it. Like, I'm listening to them think that you can do, oh, yeah, sure, the bill's great, because they're Trump people. I mean, again, just to previewing some of what you'll hear on the Focus Group pod, like, they only like legislators who basically carry out what Trump wants to have done. And there will be consequences for it. Like, we are going to pay for this stuff.
Well, not these older Trump voters, right?
Trump will be done. JV, I've heard that phrase somewhere. Where is that? Is that kind of a religious thing? Yeah.
All right. We were going to talk a little bit about Tesla and the Cybertruck, because I wrote really a banger of a piece yesterday on it. But we don't have to. It's been a very long show. Let's. One of you, guys want to talk
done?
About
you're
the Cybertruck?
You're bored?
I don't know. You tell me. I don't know.
It was a great piece you did on it. And we have an Atlantic piece out right now from Ashley Parker and Mike Scheer about how Elon is, like, leaving with his tail tucked between his legs. Jens did seem very sad at that Qatari Economic Forum. He seems a little prickly, kind of down.
Very upset.
South Africa.
People are mad at him.
Yeah, oh, that's
the Tesla,
true.
The Tesla board is probably pretty mad at him.
No, the Tesla board are his people.
He's going to be there for that big South African summit with Ernie Els.
I mean, the big thing is going to be in June. If Tesla does not launch self-driving, full self-driving robot taxis in Austin, and it doesn't go really, really well, that could be bad for Tesla. But it is weird to me that Musk's understanding of his company is just like, is the stock price up? If the stock price is up, then everything is good. And right now, the stock price is back up again. Very high stonks for Tesla. But, like, the consumer business is dying. And, like, I just, you know, again, that's like LOL nothing matters, right? Tesla is this company which doesn't sell very many cars to begin with and is now backsliding and selling fewer cars. And still it is worth more than all the other automotive companies in the world put together.
To the moon.
Okay. I don't know what to do with that, because they're going to bring to market a product that Google already has operating in a bunch of cities. It's called Waymo, right? That's the other thing. Like, this, like, Tesla's going to have robot taxis, and, you know, as if they're not even first, like, we've got them. We've had robot taxis for a couple of years at this point.
That is true. And the other thing that's related to a big, beautiful bill is they're getting rid of, you know, any of the subsidies that came from, what happened during the Biden years. And like, some interesting fallouts from that for some of the, you know, high-minded Trump fans online, some of the tech bro Trump guys. It's like, it's going to devastate the nuclear, like the growth of nuclear energy in this country, like turning back to nuclear is, like, just gone. But, like, the other thing is that our ability to compete with China, and I guess unless we decide to just start tariffing all the Chinese electric cars by 140%, but, you know, according to, like, Mike Murphy and guys who know things, I've never driven in a Chinese electric vehicle or automated vehicle, but apparently they're lapping Elon over there.
Oh, the BYD is absolutely crushing. That's the other thing. Like, Tesla's not even state of the art anymore. Hyundais are better. The Hyundai EVs are absolutely crushing. Hell, the Cadillac Lyriq is really, really good.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you the kind of guy that goes to, like, dealerships on the weekend and just, like, test drives things just for kicks?
No, I just I like cars. I'm not into cars myself, but I like them. It's like watches. Cars are like big watches.
Yeah, this is what I'm feeling really especially gay. Speaking of which, we have a big gay fundraiser. June 6th, Washington, D.C. Get your tickets. John Lovett. I've already heard of one drag queen that's coming. We've got some special guests, people you like. Go get your tickets to that. But for the heterosexual minute, JBL, I appreciated that update on the Cadillac Lyric. First I've heard of it.
Next week going to be kind of a weird week for us because we are going to be together in Meat Space. That's not dirty, Sarah. And it's going to be fantastic, but I don't know when this show will come out because of that. But just stick with us and we'll catch you on the flip side.